The education budget has not been finalized. It's a holdup that's forcing schools in Iowa to consider layoffs and vacancies in teaching positions for the coming year. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Mondays during the legislative session, my colleague Joyce Russell and I like to track activity at the State House. Later in the program, we ask several lawmakers, what's the holdup on the education budget? Before that, we listen to a conversation Joyce had with Governor Branstad about this year's legislative session as we enter the closing weeks. That's all coming up. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Mondays during the legislative session, my colleague Joyce Russell and I like to track activity at the State House. Later in the program, we'll ask several lawmakers, what's the holdup on the education budget? But first, last Friday, Joyce had the opportunity to sit down with Governor Branstad to talk about this year's legislative session as we enter the closing weeks.
Governor Branstad, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Good to be with you, Joyce.
Governor, some of your priorities have made it through the legislature this year and others haven't. I know we're not finished, but how would you rate the session so far?
Incomplete. And I always reserve judgment till the legislature completes its work. But we have addressed some of the more challenging issues, ones that have been put off for a long time, such as infrastructure, funding for the road use tax fund. Last was addressed in 1988, and that has been approved this year on a bipartisan basis. At least 50% of each caucus has Republicans and House and Senate Republicans and Democrats helped us get that done. Also, our Connect Every Acre initiative was approved with, I think, 90 votes in the House the other day. That bill passed the Senate last year. We're very optimistic the Senate will approve it. So I think infrastructure is going to be one of the big accomplishments of this session. Another difficult issue that's been resolved is the school start date. A compromise that says school will start on or after the 23rd of August, I think, is a good compromise and one that will hopefully resolve that for the long term and get away from these waivers that had schools starting as early as the 10th of August. So we have major budget issues to be addressed yet, and other things like our anti-bullying bill that I think is really important. And if you look back to 2013, the big three issues that we had, the teacher leadership program, property tax relief, and the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan, all passed in the last week of the session. So. And this is kind of normal for legislatures. They put off difficult decisions until the end, and especially the budget. So we want to work with them through this process, and I have a lot of years of experience of having done so. So I'm very hopeful that at the end they can come together, we can work with them, and we can have a sustainable budget for the long term and pass some of these other priorities that are still pending.
Since you mentioned the gasoline tax, one of the transportation experts in the Iowa House last week said that $204 million, or what in the neighborhood of $204 million that the gas tax increase is going to bring in, isn't going to solve the problem. And he outlined all of those other ideas that were on the table and said they still have to be on the table. How long will you wait before you start pushing for some of those other things?
Well, first of all, I want to compliment the legislature in addressing an issue that hadn't been addressed for a long time. And you may recall when Culver was governor, he threatened he would veto any increase in the gas tax. So that just meant that it was put off and put off. We've worked together on this over a long period of time. And the result, the fact that they passed it early and it took effect March 1, the DOT has already moved forward on a number of projects, including road and bridge repair and completing Highway 20, which is something that's been long overdue. and the counties and cities are also able to do similar things. So I'm encouraged about that. I do recognize that with the more fuel-efficient vehicles, more hybrids and electric vehicles, there's a lot of people that feel that there needs to be some changes made in the future so it's more fair, so that those people that have those extremely fuel-efficient vehicles or are not using gasoline pay their fair share. After all, the idea of this, the Road Use Tax Fund, is it's a user fee that the people who get the benefits of good roads and bridges pay the cost of it.
Well, I think some people hearing this might ask this question. You're mentioning the gasoline tax increase as one of the accomplishments of the session so far, and criticizing Governor Culver for threatening to veto such an increase. I think some people hearing this are going to say, well, you did not, Governor Branstad, you did not get out in front on this. You didn't campaign on it.
Well, what's important is we got it accomplished. What's not, you want to play politics and say, yeah, we're going to make this a real partisan issue, and then you're not going to get anything accomplished. Or you can do what I did, and that is work behind the scenes with both Republicans and Democrats and get at least 50% of each caucus to pass it. With a split legislature, that's a real accomplishment. It's easy to be partisan, but to get significant controversial things accomplished where you have to get 50% of each party to vote for it, that is an accomplishment that is not easy to do, and you don't do it by making political speeches. You do it by working behind the scenes with the leaders of both parties, and I want to compliment them. Both House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, worked with us. We had several meetings. Also, the people that worked in the transportation committees and led that effort, Senator Bowman and Representative Josh Burns, yeah. They chaired they really managed, the floor managed those bills. And there are a lot of people that gave it a real consideration. And I know not everybody voted for it, but it did get at least 50% of both caucuses in both houses. And I think that's going to take some of the partisanship out of it. So I do consider that a significant accomplishment. The last time it was done was when I was governor before in 1988, and I just had the benefit of traveling on some of those four-lane roads that were part of the connecting up Iowa, things like Avenue of the Saints, the four-lane that's up in northwest Iowa that goes to Sibley, that I was on from Sheldon to Sibley the other day. Then we were on Highway 20. Work is being done between Mobile and Correctionville, but now we're going to have the resources to complete the last segment from Correctionville to Early, and that's something that the people in Sioux City and Northwest Iowa are very appreciative of.
You mentioned the broadband bill as an example of a accomplishment this year. However,
well, it's not done yet, it's passed the House.
Right.
With 90 votes, big right. Bipartisan vote.
Okay. My question about that is, since you brought up the broadband bill, is some people are saying it's not going to do very much. There's no money in it for grants. Property tax relief for building out broadband is about all that's in it. Is that, how much of a victory is that really?
Well, it's an important start. It's still possible for the legislature to appropriate some money to support the grants. The language is in there. We just need the appropriation, and that none of the appropriation bills have passed. So I'm not giving up on getting some grant money there. There's also some federal dollars that we are able to attract as well. And we want Iowa to be the best connected state in the Midwest. And I'm going to work diligently to get this accomplished. Because it's important for our entrepreneurs in small towns. I just visited a company called, they make a beer bread in Sac City, Iowa. It's owned by a young woman who's about 30 years old. And she was telling how the biggest issue facing them is connecting via the internet with their customers from all over the country. And without high-speed internet, It's really difficult. So they need it. They need it for her business. I hear this from farmers. I was with the president of Notaboom, John Deere dealership in Sibley, Iowa, and he was telling me how sophisticated the equipment is in these John Deere tractors and combines. But if they don't have high-speed internet, they can't communicate with their suppliers and with others. And so that's why this is so important to grow the economy and make sure that we can implement precision farming that can reduce overuse of chemicals or fertilizer and help protect our water resources as well.
Well, back at the issue at hand, which is wrapping up this year's legislative session, currently at a budget impasse, Republicans and Democrats disagreeing in particular about aid for schools and many other things, the budget in general. What are you doing to try to get these two sides together?
Well, first of all, I presented a biennial budget for the next 2 years, and I presented on the second day of the legislative session. The law doesn't require me to present a budget until the end of January, so I tried to do all I could to give them all that information. The law also says my budget must be based on the December revenue estimate. Well, the legislators waited around until they had a March revenue estimate, I think thinking maybe revenue is going to be higher. Well, it turned out to be $19 million less than the budget that we based the my budget on in December. I've been around long enough to know that this is not unusual. Legislators tend to put off tough decisions to the end. School aid is the biggest chunk in the budget. Of the $7 billion budget, over $3 billion goes to K-12 public education, and we've increased it by $554 million since I came back as governor. That's about a 22.7% increase. We're also in the process of providing more money through the teacher leadership program, $50 million more a year. And then we have recommended an additional amount of money for supplemental state aid and also for the reading program, the reading resource program to help make sure that all of our kids can read effectively by the end of third grade so they can comprehend their other subjects. And so we're making an extraordinary commitment to education. And I'm very hopeful that at the end of the day, we can work out the differences between the House and the Senate. And I think the budget blueprint that we put together is one that's sustainable and makes sense. And I'm hopeful at the end of the day, although I recognize the legislature is never going to pass things just exactly as the governor recommends, but we can work these things out in a way that that is sustainable and that will be approved by both houses of the legislature.
I'm going to get down in the weeds on this a little bit. The Republicans in the House are saying that they're recommending the same amount for schools that you are, the same increase in supplemental state aid. However, they're including a $50 million that's supposed to be separate and extra for the teacher leadership plan. So they're really going after appropriating quite a bit less than you are. Are you trying to strong arm them a little bit because they're really underfunding what you want?
Well, I don't believe in strong arming anybody, and that's not how I've been able to be effective as governor. We talked earlier about how we worked together to get the agreement worked out on the road use tax fund, and that took a lot of work early in the session and even before the session began. We're working behind the scenes with House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, to try to work out these differences. I know the process. Each House has now set their own budget targets just recently. We're going through the details of those, trying to find out where there are areas of disagreement and where there are areas of agreement, and where there might be possibilities of trying to work out some of those differences. And we're doing that with both House and Senate, with both Democrats and Republicans. And most of the time I've been governor, the other party has either controlled both houses or one house or the other. And I find that As governor, it's my responsibility to try to bring them together and make sure that before the fiscal year is over, we have a unified budget. I also believe strongly we should pass a biennial, two-year budget, so we don't go through a food fight over the level of spending next year again.
And we're going to go to a couple of questions from our Facebook page. Jonna Williams-Kasperzak asks, are you in support of Senate File 484 approving medical marijuana? I think you aren't. Can you say why?
Well, I think the House of Representatives has already said it's not been approved by the FDA, and they want to wait and see. We did approve a legislation last year to deal with the critical problem that some children have with epilepsy, to be able to provide a cannabis oil, which doesn't have the hallucinogenic products of marijuana, to these children. And we're trying to work out the details of how that can be done in light of the fact that there's federal law that prohibits transport of this, which is considered to be a legal drug.
But the bill that was passed last year, I'm sure you're aware, is not really helping the families who spent so much time up here.
Well, we're hopeful that it can, but we do have some issues with the federal legislation. But we're also told the federal government's not enforcing it. And we have some states that have gone forward with legislation goes beyond what we've done. We don't want to have the mess that they have in Colorado. It's had all kinds of unintended consequences, and we want to avoid that, or California, some of these states. But yet we want to be empathetic to the families, and we want to try to find a way that they can get the resource that they feel they need to help their children.
Kate Halter asks, why have you not signed a single felon's voter restoration rights? Why are you not allowing rehabilitated felons the right to vote?
Well, that's just not true. I have signed many of them. And we have a process where an individual that's committed a felony, if they complete their sentence, pay their court costs in restitution if required by the law, or even if they're current on the restitution and have completed all of that and make an application, I grant them restored voting rights. To get their firearms rights, we have a more stringent requirement. We do a background check and all of that sort of thing. But I have assigned dozens of those restoration of rights. But I want to also see that people that have committed a felony pay their debt to society. They should at least pay their court costs and fine and serve their time before they get their rights back.
Well, on the anti-bullying issue, which you have put before the legislature the last 2 years, did not pass last year, is stalling in the House this year.
It's not over till it's over.
I know. but some people have asked me, why is the bullying issue so important to the governor?
Well, because surveys show that over 50% of the kids that are in schools in Iowa have been bullied. That is horrendous. And we have many kids that are fearful about even going to school, because it's not just happening on the playground or in the school bus or at school. It's also happening on social media 24/7. We've had some tragedies. We've even had suicides. And consequently, I want every kid to feel safe and secure at school. I want to do all we can to make sure that our students and our teachers and administration have the tools they need to combat. This is a very serious thing, and I think the legislation we've worked on for 3 years, we've had two anti-bullying summits. Lieutenant Governor and I and my wife have attended several schools. We've been impressed with the leaders. A lot of these student leaders that have stepped up, we think what they've done at like Sioux City school system, where they have a mentor program where kids are showing how you can be a positive mentor and stand up to bullies. These are the kind of things that we want to see happen all over Iowa.
Have you known someone personally who affected?
Yeah, in fact, I've met with families. And right here around this table, we had families came in and shared with me why they left their public school and why they were going to an alternative school or being homeschooled because they just felt they'd been bullied and they just didn't feel comfortable there, and how the change they made has improved their academic achievement, and they feel a lot more secure, and they're doing a lot better. So the solution for individual families may vary. We want them to have that choice, but we do want every school to be safe.
Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds is in Brazil on a trade mission as we speak. You've made no secret of the fact that you're preparing her to be the next governor when you leave office. You've talked a lot about her stamina, how she, you've met your match for energy, but what else would she bring to the job?
Well, I was impressed with what she did as a county treasurer. She was one of the leading county treasurers in the United States. In fact, she got the national award, being from a small rural county in Iowa, and she had 14 years as Clark County treasurer. She was chosen as the best county treasurer in the United States. She helped modernize that office. She led their association, and she worked on things as making it possible for people to pay their registration for their motor vehicles online instead of having to go to the courthouse. She also advocated for an alternative to, instead of reducing the number of driver's license stations, let the county treasurers issue driver's licenses, and that has been tremendously popular in rural Iowa. Now 81 counties do that, and the convenience is instead of having to wait to 1/2 day every 2 weeks to have the DOT come to your county, now all 5 days a week during regular hours you can get your driver's license. And so I was just impressed with the job she did as county treasurer, and then she was elected the state senate, and right away she became a real effective leader. I mean, she knew more about the budget than Governor Culver did, and she went and met all the department heads, so she knew the details. And I've been impressed since she's been lieutenant governor. She's been a part of all the decision making in appointing people as department heads or boards and commissions, putting the budget together. Obviously, she's leading a trade mission right now. She's been very effective. She's co-chair of the Governor's STEM Council, and we've dramatically increased the participation in STEM. So I think she's better prepared than anybody else has been, better than I was. I'd been a lieutenant governor, but back when the lieutenant governor was president of the Senate. So I think she's very well prepared someday to become governor of the state.
Well, people like to talk about the possibility that you could leave office before your four-year term ends, and that would usher the lieutenant governor into the governor's office. Can you put that chatter to rest once and for all?
I've done that many times. I mean, I love this job. I work hard at it, and the lieutenant governor is a great teammate, and we're really partners in this, and I intend to work hard every day and complete my term as governor.
Governor Branstad, thank you very much for joining us on River to River today.
Thank you.
A conversation recorded on Friday between Governor Branstad and Iowa Public Radio Statehouse correspondent Joyce Russell. Coming up after a short break, we'll ask several lawmakers what's holding up the education budget. It's a holdup that's forcing schools in Iowa to consider layoffs, vacancies, and teaching positions for the coming year. That's when we return. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Mondays during the legislative session, my colleague Joyce Russell and I like to track activity at the State House. That's what we're doing today in the first half hour. We heard Joyce talk with Governor Branstad in a conversation recorded last Friday. And Joyce, this half hour, we want to focus on education because there's a holdup there with the state education budget. It's not been finalized, forcing schools to consider layoffs and vacancies in teaching positions for the coming year. Here's just one example, Joyce. I found the Southeast Warren School District in the Quad Cities area is preparing the worst-case scenario by giving all its employees pink slips. This is 100 staff members in the district notified their contracts are not being renewed as part of a worst-case scenario budget put together by the district's leaders there. Certainly not an isolated case in the state. By law, certified public employees have to be notified by the end of April if their contract is not going to be renewed. Joyce, we have several lawmakers, a couple of lawmakers there at the State House Law Library to ask about the education budget. But before we do, give us an overview of what's been happening up to now in the legislature with the education budget and why it's so late.
Well, there's just this is a symptom of a divided legislature. This has happened before, where Democrats in the Democratic-controlled Senate and Republicans in the Republican-controlled House have different views on how much to raise basic state school aid next year, and so far they have not been able to come to terms. I noticed that the ISEA they tweeted a picture, and they've got their offices here in Ames. They've got pink slips in the window. Mm-hmm. The schools are making a concerted effort to get more funding than what the Republicans are proposing. But I should say that this has happened before, where the deadlines have not been met. Schools have had to lay teachers off, as you said, based on a worst-case scenario. Then many times those teachers are hired back later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So also, the big picture here is that Iowa spends almost $3 billion. $2.9 billion is the figure I have on K through 12 education. Democrats, is this a difference, Joyce? Democrats want to add an additional $150 million for the next school year. Republicans say they will only increase it to $100 million. And that's the sticking point, or is there any other nuance there?
Well, I've got the experts here, but okay. I think that's roughly
okay.
Correct. There's a wider difference earlier. Democrats have backed off of their number. So, you know, and it's interesting that you should say that, because out of $3 billion, $150 doesn't sound like so much, but it's we're talking about significant dollars per student, and that's what schools are concerned about.
With you at the State House Law Library, we are pleased to be joined by Senator Herman Quirnbach, a Democrat representing District 23 in Ames, and also Representative Chuck Soderberg, Republican representing District 5 in Lamars. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so tell us, what is the situation? How close are you to your two parties, respectively, close to finding a compromise? Representative Soderberg.
Well, if you look at the differences right now in the Senate counter offer proposal of an increase of 2.625%, the House is at 1.25. And I think you have to dig deeper into that. If you look at the 1.25% increase that the House has proposed, plus the teacher leadership compensation, which is based on a per student basis, the total increase in the appropriation is $99.8 million. The original 4% proposal that the Senate Democrats proposed would increase the spending by $210.2 million. Keeping in mind that if you look at what we spent last year versus the new revenue estimate that the Revenue Estimating Conference provided us March 19th, we have $180.9 million of new money to spend for fiscal year 16.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because you are working off of newer figures than we heard the governor was when he had his education budget put forward in January. So, Senator Quirnbach, is that pretty much the way you see it, or do you see you eventually closing the gap here quickly?
Well, let's back off a little bit and talk about the need here. Iowa is currently 35th in the nation in per pupil funding, 35th. We're $1,600 per child below the national average. So 1.25% increase that House Republicans are proposing only gets it at about $80 of that $1,600. That's not really any progress. In fact, at 1.25, they're not even keeping up with inflation. And if you look over the last couple of decades, our ranking relative to other states in terms of per pupil funding has been sliding and sliding and sliding. And almost in parallel lockstep, our test scores relative to other states have been sliding and sliding and sliding. So we've been sliding towards mediocrity for a long time. It's time to turn it around. Our kids deserve more. The difference right now between the House and the Senate amounts to about $55 million. Put that in context, We have reserve funds for the state of $700 million, fully 10% of the state budget. On top of that, at the end of this fiscal year, we will carry forward almost $400 million in general fund surplus. Put that together, at June 30th, we're likely to have about $1.1 billion in the bank. Republicans say they can't afford another $55 million. I think that tells you something about their priorities.
Just to clarify that, Senator Kornbach, the $700 million in reserve, that's statutory, isn't it?
That's
and
right.
It's really only the $400 million that you feel like you can tap.
Well, you compare the overall spending levels that have been proposed by Senate Democrats, and they are to the penny the same as what the governor has proposed. So there's bipartisan agreement between the Republican governor and the Senate Democrats. Actually, Democrats, well, I shouldn't speak for House Democrats, but we're broadly in agreement there on a bipartisan basis with what the overall spending number should be. The difference, we have a little difference with the governor as to how we spend the money. But as far as fiscal responsibility is concerned, if you're going to say the governor is responsible, then you got to say that Senate Democrats are also fiscally responsible in what we're proposing.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm right, the Republicans' K-12 spending is the same as what the governor's K-12 spending is the same as what the House Republicans are offering. And so, Senator Kornbach, aren't you kind of going to be outnumbered here? I mean, what kind of bargaining position do you bring there?
I respectfully disagree with that. The overall spending number that the governor has proposed, the Senate Democrats have adopted that. There's bipartisan agreement there. The House Republicans are the ones who are out of step there. Now, within that spending target, yes, we put more emphasis on education. Those are our priorities. Those are our values. Our kids are our future.
I wanted to have Representative Soderberg answer Senator Kornbach said about Iowa schools sliding into mediocrity. Do you see that more funding will prevent that slide, or do you agree with the fact that characterization of Iowa schools sliding into mediocrity?
I think that's a very good question, and it's somewhat subjective. I think if you look at the funding that has been we have adopted it and approved over the last 2 years. We have approved 4% each year. That's because we did have the additional revenue. So I think you also have to incorporate the cost of living in here. Cost of living in Iowa is not what it is in California. And if you look at the cost of living, Iowa has the benefit of being the 14th cheapest state to live in. So, you know, is 35th or is 25th the average in that respect? You would have to incorporate the cost of living.
So you're saying because our cost of living is much less, then our education cost should be much less, so we shouldn't look at it the way it was described by Senator Kornbach?
Well, if you look at the increases that have occurred over the last couple of years, and if we continue to slide, when we provide supplemental state aid at 4% increase over the last 2 years, then logic would tell you that maybe it's not the dollars, and that's why we incorporated the education reform 2 years ago to address that in a different manner than just the dollars. And looking at, I have to incorporate what Senator Kornbach said, the 1.25 does not even keep up with inflation. The Bureau of Labor Statistics for the Midwest, which Iowa uses over the last 12 months, is minus 2.66% inflation. And so we have increased that by 1.25, but the argument is we have to keep up with inflation. If that's the case, it would be a minus at 2.66.
And very briefly, Senator Kornbach, what do you say to the cost of living argument on this?
Well, I'm an economist by training and an economics professor at Iowa State, so I could get into a lot of nitty-gritty details on that. I would suggest to you that if you take out the effect of the fall of gasoline prices, you're going to see a positive effect on inflation. Usually you take out the non-volatile items like food and gasoline. And when you take those out, you know, what you're seeing is continued inflation. It is modest, but it is more than 1.25%. You know, nobody says here that we have to be number one in school funding. But listen to what Representative Soderberg is debating. He's debating whether we're 25th or 35th or 37th. He's debating whether we should be in the bottom quarter or only in the bottom half. I don't think that that's the kind of debate that Iowans expect for their schools. We want to be in the top 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, K-12 schools isn't the only area of disagreement when it comes to education. House Republicans have recommended no increase for the Regents universities. I'm sure Senator Kornbach has a view about that, but what's your rationale on that, Representative Soderberg?
Well, I think you have to go back and look at the new revenue that we have to spend. Obviously, with $180.9 million of new ongoing revenue, and, you know, we're not going to fall in the trap of using one-time money to fund ongoing programs. That's what's happened several times over the recent past. The last one was October 8th of 2009 when we had a 10% across-the-board cut. With the concerns of the ag economy, we've all seen layoffs. The avian flu is another example of concern and caution. We're trying to balance an ongoing budget with ongoing revenue. With $100 million carved off the top for K-12, we have a lot of cost with Medicaid increases. We're addressing that through cost containment and managed care. There's a lot of other things too. You know, the education reform piece, we have to pay for that. So we're trying to balance the ongoing expenditures with the ongoing revenue.
Well, very briefly, can we expect a tuition freeze if we don't give the universities an increase in funding? Representative Soderberg, and then very briefly, yeah. And then Senator Kornbach.
I think that's a great question for the Regents, Board of Regents. If you look at the cost containment initiatives, what they've done is they've tried to reduce the expenditures, reduce the cost of the Regent universities. I think there's an opportunity to provide a freeze within the savings of that program.
Senator Kornbach.
Oh, I just couldn't agree at all with that statement. The Regents Universities, they've said that they need a 1.75% increase in order to avoid a tuition increase. In other words, it's the same deal as the last couple of years when we've frozen tuition. If the state increases its support, then they don't have to ask students and their parents for more. And 1.75%, again, is barely at the level of inflation. The House is proposing zero increase. For UNI, zero increase. For Iowa State, zero increase. Actually, some cuts for the University of Iowa. It really would be quite impossible for them to afford a tuition freeze. Again, what we have here is bipartisan agreement between Senate Democrats and the Republican governor. Both of us, both sides there, have gotten on board supporting the tuition freeze and the money needed to make it possible. House Republicans are, again, the odd man out.
Very briefly, when was the last time the Regents got no increase in their basic funding, either of you? Has that ever happened in recent years?
Well, because of the Bush recession a couple of years ago, we had to slash budgets across the entire state government. And the Regents universities still, although we put back some of that money, we are still $95 million below where we were pre-recession. So the fact that we've been able to freeze tuition the last couple of years has been really quite remarkable. You know, the universities just, well, at Iowa State, I mean, Joyce, you know, you live in Ames. The town is crowded. We have about 9,000 more students over the last 8 years. We're running out of space. We need to hire more faculty. We need more lab time, more computers. We just need that increase to keep the quality up for the higher enrollment.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Senator Herman Kornbach, you're just listening to there. Representative Chuck Soderberg, a Republican from Lamar, is joining us as well. We're going to say goodbye to Representative Soderberg. Thank you very much for joining us. We have one other item to get to this hour as we track goings on at the legislature. Joyce Russell with me. I'm Ben Kiefer. We wanted to tackle, Joyce, briefly online schools. This is something that's being debated here in the last part of the session. Something called the Virtual Academy Program, and a lot of Iowans listening will not know what that is. Can you tell us before we find out what's going on with the legislature?
Well, very briefly, there are two online schools that are run by for-profits. They're in connection with school districts, one in eastern Iowa, one in western Iowa. They are run by for-profit companies. They are 100% online schools, although they are, as I said, connected with school districts. Under Iowa law, these are supposed to sunset this year. A bill in the Iowa House extended that sunset, but so far, at least technically, the bill didn't make the funnel, and so far the Senate has not taken it up. So the question really is whether we're even going to let those two online schools continue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's listen to Senator Quirnbach. You have a proposal here to do something besides what's currently happening?
Well, we've been supporting for the last couple of years an initiative called Iowa Learning Online. It's through the State Department of Education. They are tasked with developing or acquiring access to online coursework. Now, let's stipulate something. There are some kids who need online education, and for a variety of different reasons. There's no question about the goal. That's a service that we ought to offer. Mm-hmm. The question is about the means to that goal. And the virtual academies that have been set up have a very spotty record. Some kids have benefited from it. That's no question about it. I've talked to some of their parents. But last year, the dropout rate during the school year was 30%. And at the end of the school year, 26% more failed to return for this fall. So when you have about half of the people who've been enrolled dropping out either during the year or between years, that ought to set up a red flag about the quality of that program.
Okay, Senator Quirnbach, we have a red flag as far as time is going. Give me in a minute, why is this alternative better than the virtual academy? And then we need to give Representative Greg Forrestal, who's with us, a chance to respond.
Well, I think the dropout rate is the key thing. Also, the online academies, they provide no opportunity for participation in team sports or choir or band or orchestra, anything like that. But I will say this. I've talked with Representative Jorgensen, who chairs the House Education Committee, and I've offered some terms on which we could extend the virtual academies for another year or two. So far, he hasn't been willing to negotiate on that, but the door is still open.
Okay. Give us your reaction. Greg Forrestal joining us, Republican from District 22.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm very familiar and supportive of the Iowa Online from the Iowa Department. And the one problem with that, though, is it only has high school courses. It does not have the elementary, the courses that are needed and are provided by the other two providers. We knew from day one that only a few special students would benefit from this. Students who have infirm health, have disabilities, students who are professional athletes, for example, and students who just don't get along well in the classroom. And so we have a few hundred students who are benefiting greatly from this program. It would be a pity to see that end. And I'm hoping that we can come to some sort of resolution here, perhaps in the standings bill or the education bill, so that we can allow these students, these few hundred students, to continue the program, which they desperately need.
And very briefly, Senator Quirnbach, what kind of compromise are you offering?
Well, you know, the Iowa Learning Online is something that is continuing to develop, or at least we're hoping so. The bulk of the enrollment is at the high school level for the virtual academies, but we do need to flesh that out a little bit more for the earlier grades. Disappointingly, however, again, we come back to a matter of money. The House is proposing to cut the Iowa Learning Online program by 2/3. So you kind of got to wonder, are they really committed to providing online education opportunities when they're proposing a 2/3 budget cut to that program?
So that's the main compromise that you're offering, is to deal with the elementary versus the high school? I mean, you said you offered some compromise to Representative Forrestal.
Well, you know, we might be willing, and I don't want to try to commit my caucus to anything here, but we might be willing to discuss another couple of years. What the House bill did was to blow away the sunset date entirely and to make it permanent. And when you have a 50% dropout rate, I'm not willing to take that risk.
Representative Forsthoff, very briefly.
Well, this is a very new program. It's only been in existence for 3 years. We knew from day one that it was not going to be successful for every student. It's not for every student. It's not even for 1% of the students. But please, allow those students that desperately need this service to continue.
Okay, gentlemen, we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much, Representative Greg Forrestal, Republican, and Senator Herman Kurmbach, Republican, joining us. Joyce Russell, our Iowa Public Radio correspondent, checking in with goings-on at the State House on this Monday. A few more weeks of this. We'll see if the legislature gets done with its session. I think five more paid days they have, and whatever they do after that, I guess, is up to them, but it will be unpaid. Tomorrow on this program, I'll be away. Guest host Emily Woodbury will be in this seat. She'll be exploring the Varnum decision, which legalized same-sex marriage in our state over 5 years ago. With the authors of Equal Before the Law, How Iowa Led Americans to Marriage Equality. Also, our legal expert Todd Pettis will join us to discuss the possible impact of the same-sex marriage cases in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and also thanks to Juliet Davis. John Pemble helped us out in Des Moines today. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.